water glass. And he pretended he liked my body. She rolls her eyes. Taylor, I guarantee he wasn't pretending. I know you think men only get hard-ons from stick women, but trust me, you're wrong. Curves drive them wild. Yeah, curves, not rolls. You don't have rolls. Thankfully, not at the moment. I've been diligent about eating healthy since the new year, after overindulging during the holidays and putting on nearly 10 pounds. In 3 months, I'd shed about 9 of those 10, which I'm happy with, but I'd love to lose more. My ideal body goal is somewhere between Kate Upton and Ashley Graham. I tend to fluctuate between the two, but if I could get down to Kate's size, I'd be thrilled. I truly believe that all body types are beautiful. It's only when I look in the mirror that I forget. My weight has been a source of stress and insecurity my entire life, so maintaining it is a priority for me. I swallow the last bite of my omelet while pretending not to notice how fucking delicious Sasha's breakfast looks. A mouth-watering stack of chocolate chip pancakes bathed in a sea of sugary syrup. She's one of those fortunate girls who can eat anything and not gain a single pound. Meanwhile, I take one bite of a cheeseburger and gain 10 pounds overnight. That's just the way my body is, and I've accepted it. Cheeseburgers and pancakes taste great in the moment, but they're not worth it for me in the long run. Anyway, I continue, he really was a gentleman.
Still can't believe that.
She says through a mouthful of pancakes. She chews quickly.
And he told you to call him?
I nod, but obviously he didn't mean it.
Why is that obvious?
Because he's Connor Edwards and I'm Taylor Marsh? I roll my eyes. Also, he didn't give me his number. She frowns. Ha! That shut her up fast. Yep, so whatever fantasy romance you were concocting in your pretty head, you can forget about it. Connor did me a favor the other night. I offer a shrug. Nothing more to it than that.
5. Connor. If any of us harbored notions that Coach Jensen might take it easy on us after securing our berth into the NCAA Division I Championship semifinals, that delusion is quickly put to rest when we take the ice for Monday morning skate. From the first whistle, Coach has been on a rampage like he just found out Jake Connolly knocked up his daughter or something. We spend the first hour on speed training, skating until our toenails bleed. Then he calls a series of shooting drills, and I take so many shots on net it feels like my arms might melt out of their sockets. Whistle, skate, whistle, shot, whistle, kill me. By the time Coach orders us to the media room to study game footage, I'm all but crawling off the ice. Even Hunter, who's tried his damnedest to maintain a positive attitude as team captain, is starting to look like he wants to call his mommy to come pick him up. In the tunnel, we share a pitiful look. Same dude. After a bottle of Gatorade and one of those jelly nutrition tubes, I'm feeling half alive, at least. The media room offers 3 semicircular rows of plush chairs, and I'm in the first row with Hunter and Bucky. Everyone is slouched over from exhaustion. Coach walks over to stand in front of the projector screen with the static image of our game against Minnesota bleeding onto his face. Even the sound of him clearing his throat gives me jitters.
Some of you seem to think the hard part's over. That you're just going to coast to a championship and it's all champagne and after parties from here on out. Well, I got news for you.
He slams his hand twice against the wall, and I swear the whole building shakes. We all snap upright in our seats, wide the fuck awake.
Now's when the work begins. You were running on training wheels until today. Now Dad is dragging you to the top of the hill and giving your asses a good shove.
The footage rolls in slow motion on the screen. The D-line gets caught out of position on a breakaway and gives up a shot on net that pings off the post. That's me there on the left, and watching my dumbass scramble to chase down the shooter puts a pit in my stomach.
Right here, Coach says. We checked out mentally, got caught puck watching. It only takes a second to lose focus, and then bam, we're playing catch-up. He fast-forwards the tape. This time it's Hunter, Foster, and Jesse who can't string their passes together. Come on, ladies. This is basic stuff you've been doing since you were five. Soft hands. Visualize where your teammates are. Get open. Follow through. Around the room, we're all taking hits to our overinflated egos. That's the thing about Coach. He doesn't suffer divas. For a few weeks now, we felt damn near invincible on our rise to the top. Now that we've got our fiercest opponents ahead of us, it's time to get our feet back on the ground. That means taking our licks in practice. Wherever that puck is, I want three guys ready to take it, Coach continues. I don't ever want to see someone standing around looking for an open man. If we want to square up to Brown or Minnesota, we need to play our game. Quick passes, high pressure. I want to see confidence behind the stick. My coach back in L.A. was a real son of a bitch. The kind of guy who burst into a room screaming and shouting, slamming doors and throwing chairs. At least twice a season he'd get ejected from a game, then come to the next practice and take it all out on us. Sometimes we deserved it. Other times it was like he needed to exercise 40 years of shame and inadequacy on a bunch of dumb kids. No wonder the hockey program was shit. Because of him, I almost didn't bother going out for the team when I transferred to Breyer. But I knew the program's reputation and had heard good things. Coach Jensen was a relief. He can be hard on us, but he's never malicious. Never so focused on sport he forgets he's coaching real people. One thing I've never doubted is that Coach Jensen cares about every one of these guys. Even busted Hunter out of jail last semester. For that, we'd follow him anywhere. Toenails be damned. All right, that's it for today. I want everyone to check in with the nutritionist and make sure you're clear on the meal plans for the next few weeks. We're going to be pushing ourselves harder than we have all season. That means I want you guys taking care of your bodies. If you've got bangs and bumps, get with the trainers and have them evaluated. Now's not the time to hide any issues. Every man needs to know he can count on the guy next to him, okay? Hey, Coach, Hunter speaks up. He sighs, cringing. The guys were wondering if we could get an update on the mascot situation. The pig. You idiots are still on about the damn pig? Yeah. In the absence of Pablo Escobar, some of the boys are experiencing withdrawals. I snicker under my breath. Not gonna lie, I kinda miss our stupid egg mascot too. He was a cool dude. Jesus Christ. Yes, you're getting your damn pet. Sometime in August, last I heard. There is an absurd amount of paperwork involved in the acquisition of a swine for non-agricultural purposes. Okay? Satisfied, Davenport? Yep. Thanks, Coach. We all start getting up to leave. Conversations breaking out while guys head for the doors. Oh, hang on. Coach booms. Everyone halts, like good little soldiers. Almost forgot. Words come down from the higher-ups that our attendance is required at some alumni grip and grin Saturday afternoon. Groans and protests erupt. What? Why? Matt Anderson calls from the back of the room. Oh, come on, Coach, Foster whines. Beside me, Gavin is pissed. That's bullshit. What's a grip and grin? Bucky asks. Sounds like we're supposed to be jerking them off or something. Essentially, Coach replies. Listen, I hate these things too, but when the provost says jump, the athletic director says how high. But we're the ones doing the jumping, Alec protests. Now you're getting it. These things are all about kissing ass for cash. The university counts on these little dog and pony shows to support things like athletics and building you princesses' fancy training facilities. So get your suits pressed, comb your hair, for fuck's sake, and be on your best behavior. Does this mean I'm going to be getting my ass pinched by rich cougars? The whole room laughs when Jesse raises his hand to speak. Because I'm cool with taking one for the team, but my girlfriend is the jealous type and I'm gonna need a note or something on letterhead if she asks me about this.
I'd like to go on record as stating I find this premise sexist and exploitative, Bucky chimes in.
In a flat tone that suggests he's well sick of our shit, Coach digs his fingers into his eyes and recites from what I assume is Briar's code of conduct.
It is university policy that no student shall be required to behave in an unethical or immoral manner, or that which may conflict with their sincerely held religious or spiritual beliefs. The university is an equal opportunity institution based on high academic achievement and does not discriminate on the basis of gender, sexual orientation, economic status, religion or lack thereof, or the temperament of your girlfriend. Satisfied, everyone?
Thanks, Coach,
Bucky says with an exaggerated thumbs up. Dude is going to give him an aneurysm one of these days. But Jesse and Bucky aren't that off base. There's something fundamentally broken about a system that has us paying 50 grand a year to still be treated like prostitutes. Those of us who aren't here on a free ride, at least. Like myself. If there's one thing I'm good at, though, it's playing the boy toy. I'll say this much for these bunch of goons. We sure clean up nice. The team came looking sharp in our best attire on Saturday afternoon. Beards trimmed, hair gelled. Bucky even plucked his nose hairs as he made sure to inform us all. The alumni luncheon is being held in Woolsey Hall on campus. So far, it's consisted of listening to a bunch of people get up and talk about how Briar made them the men and women they are today. Giving back, school spirit, blah, blah, blah. The assigned seating cards have split up the athletics department, along with representatives of the Greeks, student government, and a handful of other notable student organizations, among the many tables with the alumni guests. Mostly it's been smile, nod, laugh at their bad jokes, and tell them, "Yes, sir, we're taking the championship this year." It's not all bad, though. The food's decent, and there's plenty of free booze, so at least I've got a little buzz going. No matter how good I look in a suit, though, I still feel like they can smell it on me. The stench of poverty. The hospital stink of new money. All these rich assholes who probably spent most of their college years snorting coke through $100 bills from trust funds that have been earning interest since their ancestors were involved in the slave trade. 7 months ago, I showed up at Briar, a punk-ass kid from L.A., exactly the type the good folks of Ivy institutions prefer to have mopping their floors rather than attending classes. A stepfather with deep pockets, however, does wonders for one's image in the eyes of the admissions board. Yeah, I clean up nice, but shit like this reminds me I'm not one of them. I'll never be one of them.
Mr. Edwards,
the older woman seated next to me has what looks like the entirety of the Queen's jewels hanging off her neck. She slides one bony hand over my thigh and leans into me.
Would you be a dear and see if you can rustle a lady up a gin and tonic? Wine gives me a headache.
She smells like cigarettes, peppermint gum, and expensive perfume. Sure thing. Hoping she can't pick up on my relief, I excuse myself from the table, thankful to break away for a bit. Outside the main ballroom, I find Hunter, Foster, and Bucky at the cocktail bar, where the catering staff is packing up after the hors d'oeuvre reception.
Can I bother you for a gin and tonic? I ask the bartender.
Yeah, no problem.
He starts pouring the drink.
More bottles I empty, less I have to carry out of here.
Gin and tonic? Bro, when did you become my grandmother?
Bucky jokes. It's not for me, it's for my cougar. Hunter snorts and sips his beer. Please don't laugh. A couple more gin and tonics and she'll legit be trying to hop on my dick. I nod at the bartender for permission, then steal one of the Stellas he's got sitting in a box on the floor.
From what I hear, Foster says, your dick's been pretty busy this week.
I pop the cap on my beer with the ring I wear on my right middle finger.
What's that supposed to mean? Way I hear it, you spent the night with a Kappa last Friday and jumped right into bed with a Tri-Delta on Thursday.
It sounds crass when he says it that way, but yeah, I suppose that's how it looks. He doesn't know, of course, that Taylor and I shared a lovely platonic evening of conversation, and I can't defend her honor without also blowing her cover. I trust these guys, but it's inevitable that anything I say gets back to their girls and, well, people talk.
Who told you about the Delta hookup?
I ask curiously, because Natalie'd snuck me into the sorority house after midnight. Apparently the Delta house has some ridiculous rule about dudes sleeping over.
She did, Foster answers, snickering.
I furrow my brow.
Huh?
Bucky slides his phone from his pocket.
Oh yeah, we all saw that pic. Hold on.
He taps the screen a few times.
Yeah, here it is.
I peer at Bucky's Instagram feed. And yep, there's Natalie in a selfie giving the camera a thumbs up, while I'm in the lower corner of the frame sound asleep. Below it, the caption reads, look who scored. Hashtag Briar Hockey Hottie. Hashtag stick it. Hashtag buzzer beater. Hashtag goal. Real nice.
I give it high marks for lighting and composition, Foster says, laughing.
Jackass.
Hashtag puck bunny, Bucky adds. Hashtag.
I take the gin and tonic from the bartender and head back inside to deliver it, shooting a middle finger at the guys as I leave. It's not the ribbing that bothers me, or even the picture, really. I just feel kind of cheap. Someone's fuck for likes. I might be a little promiscuous, but I don't treat women like conquests. A simple exchange of physical pleasure, where everyone gets what they want and no lies are told, is perfectly healthy. Why go and make the other person feel like a piece of meat? Then again, I guess it isn't any more than I deserve. Act like a fuckboy, get treated like a fuckboy. When I return to the ballroom, the concert jazz band is playing, and the plates from lunch have been cleared. Most of the guests have taken to the dance floor now, including my bejeweled cougar. I set the drink on the table and have a seat, praying that nobody comes over to force me to dance. So far, so good. I sip my beer, and people watch. Soon, a conversation a couple tables away catches my ear. Oh, please, don't give her so much credit. It was a dare, okay? It's not like he was hitting on her or something. Trust me, a girl's voice answers. I heard what was going on in there. He saw those porn star tits and ass and probably figured as long as he fucked her from behind, he wouldn't have to look at her butter face.
I'd bang Taylor's body with your face,
a dude responds. My fingers tighten over the beer bottle. These asshats are talking about Taylor? Are you kidding me, Kevin? Say that again and I'll put your balls in my flat iron.
Damn, Abigail, I'm kidding. Down, girl.
Abigail, Taylor's sorority sister who made her take that stupid dare? I spare a quick peek over my shoulder. Yeah, that's her. I remember her standing in the hall at the Kappa house when I made my walk of shame that morning. She's sitting with a group of Kappas I recognize from the party and a few other guys. Taylor was right. She's a grade A bitch. Assuming she must be here somewhere, I scan the room for Taylor, but I can't find her. You know she wants to be a teacher, another girl says. She'll totally end up like one of those chicks who gets pregnant banging their students.
Oh, dude, she should do teacher porn. One of the guys responds. Those double D's would make mad money.
How does anyone still make money on porn? Isn't that shit free now?
You should see the stuff we have on video from Pledge Week. It would crash your spank bank.
It isn't until the cougar returns for her gin and tonic and leaves a smudged lipstick print on my cheek that I realize my fists are clenched under the table and I've been holding my breath. I'm not entirely sure what to make of that. These people suck, yeah. But why am I getting all bent out of shape about a girl I knew for one night? My teammates always joke that nothing ever fazes me, and normally they're right. I'm very good at letting shit slide off my shoulders, especially when it doesn't directly pertain to me. But this entire conversation is pissing me off.
You see that Delta's post on Insta? Connor wasn't even coming back to Taylor for seconds. Some girls are just made to be one-night stands. That's her place, Abigail says, her tone smug. Landing a guy like Connor is an unattainable goal for Taylor. The sooner she realizes that, the happier she'll be. It's sad, really. Oh my God, I bet she's already doodling Taylor loves Connor on her notebooks, writing Taylor Edwards in blood in her diary.
They laugh, rolling all over themselves. Assholes. It crosses my mind to go over there, confront them. Taylor didn't do anything to deserve this shit. She's a cool chick, smart, funny. It's been a long time since I've actually wanted to spend a whole night talking to a total stranger, and not because she was a pity case or I needed an alibi. I had a legit good time with her. These assholes aren't allowed to talk smack about. Speak of the devil. My shoulders stiffen when I catch sight of Taylor walking in my direction. Her head is bent, engrossed with her phone. She's wearing a knee-length black dress, a short pink cardigan buttoned up to her neck, and her hair in a messy bun at the nape of her neck. I remember the way she'd lamented about her curves, and I honestly don't get it. Taylor's body is 1,000 times more appealing to me than, say, Abigail's scrawny one. Women are supposed to be soft and curvy and squeezable. I'm not sure when they were brainwashed into thinking otherwise. My mouth goes a bit dry as Taylor approaches. She looks really fucking good tonight. Sexy, elegant, undeserving of these people's scorn. Something compels me. A sense of justice, maybe. The triumph of good over evil. I get a tickle on the back of my neck. The one that says, I'm about to have a stupid idea. As she passes the table beside me, unaware of me sitting here, I jump to my feet to catch her. Taylor, hey, why didn't you call me? I say loud enough to draw the attention of Abigail and her group 2 tables away. Taylor blinks, stunned, and rightfully confused. Come on, babe, play along. I implore her with my eyes as I repeat myself, my tone extra forlorn. Why didn't you call me?
6. Taylor. I'm trying to listen to what Connor is saying to me, but the sight of him in a suit is affecting my concentration. His big shoulders and broad chest fill out that navy blue jacket like nobody's business. I'm tempted to ask him to do a little spin so I can assess the butt situation. I bet his butt looks amazing.
Taylor,
he says impatiently. I blink, forcing my gaze back to his face. Connor, hi. Sorry, what?
It's been a week,
he says, with a strange eagerness about him.
You haven't called me. I thought we had a good time together at the party.
My mouth falls open. Is he serious right now? I mean, yeah, he technically said call me as he left Saturday morning, but that was part of the performance, right? He hadn't even provided his phone number. Sorry again? I wrinkle my forehead. I guess we got our wires crossed.
Are you avoiding me?
He demands. What? Of course not. He's acting weird and sort of whiny. Suddenly, I'm wondering if this is some kind of personality disorder thing. Or maybe he's drunk? There have been a lot of free drinks at this thing, hence why I'd been making a beeline for the restroom before he'd lunged from out of nowhere and ambushed me.
I can't stop thinking about you, Taylor. Can't eat. Can't sleep.
He rakes an agitated hand through his hair.
I thought we made a connection that night. I wanted to play it cool, you know, not come off too aggressive. But I miss you, babe.
If this is a joke, it isn't funny. Clenching my fists to my sides, I take a step back. Okay, I don't know what this is, but for what it's worth, I saw that Instagram post of you in bed with some girl, so I'd say you're coping just fine.
Because you messed with my head.
He lets out an agonized groan.
Look, I know I screwed up. I'm weak, but only because I've been so hurt thinking that amazing night we spent together didn't mean anything to you.
Now I'm worried about him. Exasperation has me stepping forward again. Connor, you're... He grabs me without warning, envelops me in his arms, digging his big hands into my waist as he dips down to bury his face in the crook of my neck. I freeze, stunned, and honestly, a little scared of what's happening right now. Until he whispers against my ear,
I promise I'm not a weirdo, but I need your help, and I won't touch your penis. Just go with it, T.
I pull back to meet his eyes, glimpsing a gleam of urgency and a twinkle of humor. I'm still not sure what's going on, though. Is he trying to get back at me for what I did to him last weekend? Is it a joke? A silly callback?
Con, man. Leave the poor girl alone.
An amused voice remarks. I turn toward the dark-haired guy who'd spoken, and that's when I notice Abigail and Jules. My sorority sisters are sitting with their boyfriends and some of the Sigma guys, and this is all starting to make more sense. My heart melts a little. The world doesn't deserve Connor Edwards.
Get lost, Captain,
Connor drawls without turning around.
I'm wooing my woman.
I swallow a laugh. He winks at me and squeezes my hand in reassurance. Then, to my complete dismay, he drops to his knees. Oh, God. Everyone who wasn't staring at us before is sure as shit staring at us now. My good humor comes precariously close to evaporating. With his heart-stopping face, I'm sure Connor is used to being the center of attention. Me? I'd rather have wood slivers shoved under my fingernails than be on the receiving end of it. But I can feel Abigail's eyes laser beaming into me, which means I can't convey weakness, can't show even a trace of the anxiety currently eating away at my stomach like battery acid.
Please, Taylor, I'm begging. Put me out of my misery. I'm ruined without you. What in the actual hell is happening?
Another male inquires.
Shut up, Maddie,
the first guy admonishes.
I'm dying to see where this goes.
Connor continues to ignore his buddies. His gray eyes never leave my face.
Go out with me. One date.
I don't think so, I reply. A shocked gasp sounds from the vicinity of the Kappa table.
Come on, T,
he pleads.
Just give me a shot to prove myself.
I have to bite the inside of my cheek to keep from laughing. Hysterical tears well in my eyes. When I hesitate for a long time, it's not because I'm trying to create drama and tension. I'm worried if I open my mouth, I'll either burst into laughter or sob from embarrassment. Fine, I finally relent, shrugging. To appear even more aloof, I sort of gaze off toward the stage as if I'm bored with this entire exchange. One date, I guess. His entire face lights up.
Thank you. I promise you won't regret it.
I already do. We don't stay at the alumni banquet much longer after Connor's big performance. Considering I hadn't wanted to go in the first place, I'm more than grateful to leave. Last year, Sasha and I got tipsy and had a blast, but she couldn't attend this time because she had a last-minute rehearsal for her spring showcase, which means I'd just spent the past several hours smiling and mingling and pretending to be BFFs with Kappas who either hate me or are just indifferent. Not to mention this stupid cardigan I'm wearing. I'd thrown it on earlier after growing weary of all the ogling being directed at my cleavage, and I've been sweating like crazy. Connor offers to give me a lift back to my apartment since we both live in Hastings, but turns out he's some kind of sneaky mind wizard because somehow we end up at his place instead. I don't know what compels me to agree to dinner and a movie. I decide to blame the 2 glasses of champagne I drank at the banquet, even though I feel completely sober.
Fair warning,
he says as we stand outside a townhouse on a quiet, tree-lined street.
My roommates can be a bit excitable.
Like trying to hump my leg excitable or easily startled and afraid of loud noises?
A bit of both. Just smack them on the nose if they get out of hand.
I nod and square my shoulders. Got it. If I can handle a classroom full of 2 dozen 6-year-olds raging on a sugar high, I'm well up to the task of taming 4 hockey players. Although it'd probably be easier if I had pudding cups.
Con, that you?
Someone calls when we enter.
What do you want in your grain bowl?
Connor takes my coat to hang on one of the hooks by the door.
Everyone put your dicks away,
he announces.
We've got a guest.
Grain bowl? I ask, confused.
Team nutrition rules. We're all eating like mice. No wasted calories.
He sighs. I know the feeling. He leads me around the corner into the living room, where 3 men of imposing figures are spread out on the couches, 2 playing Xbox. They're still in their suits from the banquet, albeit in various stages of disarray, with ties undone and shirts untucked. Together, they look like a GQ cologne ad that ostensibly attempts to portray the aftermath of a fashionable boys' night out in Vegas or something. All that's missing is disembodied female legs in heels draped over their shoulders, and maybe a pair of lacy red underwear elegantly slung over the armrest.
Guys, this is Taylor. Taylor, these are the guys.
Connor strips out of his suit jacket and tosses it on the back of a chair. For a moment, I'm transfixed, watching the way his muscles push against the crisp white fabric of his shirt, his chest straining against the buttons. He may have just ruined me for suits. In unison, the guys reply,
"Hi, Taylor,"
like we're all in on a joke. "Hi, guys." I wave, now feeling awkward. All the more so because it's hot in this room and I really, really want to take off my sweater. But the dress I'm wearing must have shrunk in the wash yesterday because my tits have been attempting to jailbreak out of it all afternoon. It's discouraging to walk around a room full of former White House officials, Nobel laureates, and Fortune 500 CEOs and find that they still haven't perfected looking a woman in the eyes since their fraternity days. Men are a failed species.
So you're the one.
Hunched forward with a game controller in his hand, one of the roommates raises an eyebrow at me. He's handsome, with the kind of dimples that leave bodies in their wake. I recognize him from the banquet as the dude standing with Connor's team captain. He'd beat Connor home, but that's my fault. I needed to hit the ladies, and the lines had been atrocious. What one? I ask, playing dumb.
The one who sent Con to his knees and turned him into a slobbering, love-professing fool?
Mr. Dimples eyes me expectantly, waiting for me to fill in the gaps.
Oh shit, that was you?
Another guy demands.
Can't believe we skipped out before the big show.
He pins an accusing look on the guy beside him.
Told you we should have stayed for one more drink. No interrogating my guests, Matt.
Connor grumbles.
Same rule applies to all of you. Are you our new mommy?
The third guy cracks open a beer, smiling with stupid puppy dog eyes, and I can't help but laugh in return.
All right, that's enough.
Connor kicks Matt off the smaller of the 2 couches and gestures for me to take a seat.
This is why you dumbasses don't get visitors.
Their house is huge compared to my little apartment. A big living room with old leather sofas and a couple of reclining chairs. A massive flat-screen TV with at least 4 different game consoles hooked up to it. When Connor said he lived with 4 roommates, I expected to walk into a nightmarish cave of man smells, pizza boxes, and dirty laundry. But the place is actually pretty tidy and doesn't smell at all like feet and boy farts.
Yo, visitor.
A 4th face appears in the doorway that separates the living room from the kitchen.
What do you want from Freshy Bowl?
He demands, a cell phone pressed to his ear. Grilled chicken salad, please, I call back without delay. I'm very familiar with the menu of one of Hastings' only healthy eating choices.
On me,
Connor murmurs when I reach for my purse so I can chip in. I glance over. Thanks,
I'll get the next one. The next one? As if this rare occurrence of me having dinner at Connor Edwards' house will ever fucking repeat itself, there's a better chance of Halley's Comet showing up a few decades ahead of schedule. And I'm not the only one marveling over this unforeseen turn of events. When Sasha texts a few minutes later and I inform her where I am, she accuses me of pranking her. While Connor and his roommates debate over which movie to stream, I surreptitiously text my best friend back. Me. Not a prank, I swear. Her. You're actually at his house? Me. Swear on my signed poster of Ariana Grande. That's the only pop star Sasha allows me to fangirl over. Usually it's, if they can't sing live without lip-syncing or using their auto-tuner, then they're not a real musician, blah, blah, blah. Her. 50% of me still thinks you're lying to me. Is it just the two of you? Me. Six of us. Me plus Con plus four roommates. Her. Con? We're on nickname basis now? Me. No, we're on shortening his name for texting convenience basis. I'm about to punctuate that with an eye roll emoji when the phone is unceremoniously snatched from my hand. Hey, give it back! I protest, but Connor just flashes an evil grin and proceeds to read my entire text convo with Sasha out loud to his roommates.
You have a signed poster of Ariana Grande?
Alec demands. At least, I think it's Alec. I'm still trying to learn all their names.
Do you kiss it goodnight before bedtime?
Inquires Matt, which evokes a howl of laughter from the others. I glare at Connor. Traitor. He winks.
Hey. Like my junior high teacher, Ms. Dillard, always warned, if she catches you writing notes in geography, she'll read them out loud to the whole class.
Ms. Dillard sounds like a sadist, and so are you. I roll my eyes dramatically. What if I'd been texting about my horrible period cramps? Next to Alec, Gavin blanches.
Give her the phone back, Con. Nothing good could come of this.
Connor's gray eyes dip back to the screen.
But T's friend doesn't believe we're all hanging out. Hold on. Let's show receipts. Smile, boys.
Then he has the gall to snap a picture. My jaw drops when all four roommates flex their biceps for the camera.
There,
Connor says with a satisfied nod.
Sent.
I forcibly wrest the phone from his stupid hand. Sure enough, he'd sent Sasha that pic, and her response is immediate. Her.
OMFG, I want to lick Matt Anderson's dimples.
Her.
And then suck his dick.
I burst out laughing, which prompts Connor to try to steal my phone again. This time, I win the battle and firmly shove the iPhone into my purse before anyone can get their grubby hands on it. See this? I tell the room, holding up the leather purse. This is a sacred place. Any man who dares snoop through a woman's purse will be murdered in his sleep by the bag butcher. Connor snickers.
Damn, babe. Your serial killer is showing.
I just shoot him a saccharine smile. Then I finally shrug out of my cardigan because all these big male bodies are generating a crazy amount of heat. The moment the material slides off my shoulders, I feel more than one set of eyes travel to my chest. A flush rises in my cheeks, but I ignore it and purse my lips. Everything okay there? I ask Gavin, whose brown eyes are completely glazed over.
Yeah. All good. I like your dress.
Matt snickers from his new perch on one of the recliners.
Pick your tongue off the floor, lover boy.
That snaps Gavin out of his stupor, and despite their initial ogling, the rest of the guys go back to acting normally, which I appreciate. I wouldn't quite call them perfect gentlemen, but they're not sleazebags either. Once the food arrives, the guys stream Deep Star 6. I eat my grilled chicken salad and watch as the underwater naval station is under attack by a giant crab monster, all the while wondering how I've been hypnotized into hanging out with Connor Edwards. Not that I mind, exactly. He's fun. Sweet, even. But I still haven't figured out his angle. When it comes to men and unprovoked friendship, I tend to lean toward skeptical. In the car, I'd quizzed him about why he'd made that big show in front of Abigail and her cronies, and he'd merely shrugged and said,
"Because it's fun to mess with the Greeks."
I do believe he had fun messing with them, but I also know there's more to the story. I just can't ask him in front of his roommates, which makes me wonder if he knows that and is therefore using them as a shield so he doesn't have to answer any questions.
Like, how does that even make sense?
Joe, who told me to call him Foster, hits a bong while reclined on the Lazy Boy.
The pressure variance between such extreme depths would require several hours of decompression before ascent. Dude, there's a giant crab monster trying to eat their mini-sub,
Matt says.
You're thinking too much. Nah, man. This is preposterous. If they expect me to take their premise seriously, they have to stick to certain basic laws of physics. I mean, come on. Where's the dedication to storytelling?
Connor's shaking his head beside me on the love seat, visibly holding in a laugh. He is so ridiculously attractive, it's hard to concentrate on anything other than the chiseled cut of his jaw, the perfect symmetry of his movie star face. Every time he glances over at me, my heart flips around like a happy dolphin, and I have to force myself to play it cool.
I think you're taking this a bit hard,
he tells Foster.
All I'm asking for is a little pride in one's work, okay? How do you make a movie about an underwater sea station and just decide that the rules don't apply? You're going to make a space movie where there's no vacuum and everyone can breathe outside without a spacesuit? No, because that's fucking dumb.
Take another bong hit,
Gavin advises from the couch, then shoves a fork full of food in his mouth.
You're cranky when you're sober. Yeah, well, I'm gonna.
Foster takes a long hit, releases a plume of smoke, then goes back to sulking as he angrily eats his quinoa. He's a weird one. Hot, though, and obviously highly intelligent. Before the movie started, I was informed that Foster is majoring in molecular biophysics, which makes him a science geek slash hockey player slash stoner, the strangest of combinations. Aren't you guys drug tested? I ask Connor.
Yeah, but as long as we keep the intake to a minimum and not too often, it doesn't pop up on the piss test,
he says.
Trust me,
mumbles Alec, who's draped over the armrest and not entirely conscious. He'd fallen asleep on the couch beside Gavin pretty much as soon as the movie started.
You don't want to know Foster without weed. Bite my ass,
Foster barks back.
Could you jackasses try not embarrassing yourselves in front of the company?
Connor chides.
Sorry, they're not housebroken.
I grin. I like them.
See that, Con?
Retorts Matt.
She likes us. Yeah, so fuck you,
Gavin says cheerfully. I wish living in the Kappa house had been more like this. I had hoped for sisterhood and got season one of Scream Queens with my very own channel number one instead. Not that all the girls became as unbearable as Abigail, but it was all too much. The noise, the constant commotion, every detail of life being a group activity. I'm an only child, and for a while, I entertained the idea that having siblings would fulfill some hole in my life I hadn't known was there. Well, I learned real quick that some people are built to share a bathroom, and some would sooner poop in the woods than spend one more morning waiting for 10 other chicks to finish brushing their hair. When the movie ends, the guys are gunning for a scary one next, but Connor says he doesn't feel like another film and tugs me off the sofa.
Come on,
he drawls, and my heart does a couple more backflips.
Let's go upstairs.
7. Taylor. Connor and I retreat to his room to whistles and suggestive grunts from the guys. They're only a step or two on the evolutionary scale from feral chickens, but they're certainly not boring. I know they think we're going upstairs to have sex, but I have a different goal in mind. Now that I've got you alone, I say after Connor closes the door behind us. He has the master bedroom, which is big enough for a king bed with a dark wooden frame, a love seat across the room, and an entertainment center with another massive TV. He's also got an ensuite bathroom and a big window that takes up half the wall and overlooks a small backyard where most of the winter snow has finally melted.
Yeah, babe. I'm game.
Connor rips his tie from his shirt collar and flings it across the room. I roll my eyes. Not that.
Tease.
I take a seat on his bed against the headboard and put one of his pillows between us like he did the last time we found ourselves alone in a room together. The blue plaid bedset says his mom picked out something masculine for him at Neiman Marcus. It's very soft and smells like him, sandalwood with the salty hint of the ocean. I want to know, what was that display at the banquet really about?
I already told you.
Yeah, and I think there's more to the story. So, spill.
Wouldn't you rather make out?
He climbs onto the mattress beside me, and suddenly the bed feels very, very tiny. Is this actually a king size? Because he's right there, and one measly pillow isn't going to protect me from the heat of his athletic body and the scent of his aftershave. I force myself not to be affected by the sexy grin he flashes me. Connor, I say with the tone I use with my first graders when one of them won't share the crayons. His flirtatious smile evaporates.
If I said you didn't want to know, would you trust me and let it go?
No. I meet his gaze head on. Tell me why you did what you did at the alumni banquet. On a deep sigh, he rubs his hands over his face and combs his hair out of his eyes.
I don't want to hurt you.
The confession comes out in a mumble. I'm a big girl. If you respect me, tell me the truth.
Damn, T. Right in the fucking feels.
He looks at me with such pained eyes, I have to brace for the worst. That maybe Abigail put him up to the whole thing. That they planned it together. That first dare, the love bombing at Woolsey Hall, it was all a big scheme to make me catch feelings for him. Only now he's having regrets? It's a mortifying scenario, but it also wouldn't be the worst thing Abigail's ever done.
Fine, but keep in mind, these are their words, not mine.
He recounts overhearing Abigail and Jules talking with their boyfriends earlier about my hookup with Connor. I flinch when he explains in an unhappy tone that their conversation included discussion of my potential as a porn actress, among other digs. Lovely. He's right. I could have lived without the gory details. Before he's even stopped speaking, I'm feeling nauseated. My stomach twists at the thought of Connor hearing them say all that shit about me. I'm still 20 pounds from my goal porn star weight, I joke at my own expense. Most of the time, if you make fun of yourself first, it takes all the wind out of the fat-shaming sails. Showing people you're self-aware softens their aversion to having a chubby friend, because it's important to everyone that we know our place.
Don't do that.
Connor sits up to level me with narrowed eyes.
There's nothing wrong with the way you look.
It's okay. You don't need to make me feel better. I have no delusions about how people see me. The jabs land every time, but by now the nerve endings are mostly dead. At least, that's what I tell myself. I was a chubby kid. I was a chubby teenager. I shrug. I've struggled with weight my whole life. This is what I am, and I've accepted that.
No, you don't get it, Taylor.
Frustration crosses his expression.
Your body isn't something you have to make excuses for. I know I've said this before, and I guess I'll keep saying it until you believe me, but you're smoking hot. I'd do you right now in a heartbeat 6 different ways if you'd let me.
Shut up your whole face, I laugh. He doesn't laugh with me. Rather, he gets off the bed and turns his back to me. Oh, crap. Is he mad that I told him to shut up? I thought we were kidding around. That's our thing, right? Wait, do we know each other well enough to have a thing? Fuck. Before I can fix whatever I've broken, Connor starts unbuttoning his shirt, then peels it off his shoulders. Stunned, I sit in admiration of his bare back, tan skin over long, lean muscles. God, I want to press my mouth against that spot between his shoulder blades and explore it with my tongue. The notion sends a shiver running through me. I bite my lip just to keep from making a totally unbecoming noise. He throws the shirt across the room, then undoes his trousers. They hit the hardwood, and now he's left in nothing but black socks and boxer briefs that cling to the tightest butt I've ever seen. What are you doing? My voice comes out breathier than I intend.
Take your clothes off.
He turns around and stalks back to the bed with fierce determination.
Excuse me?
I scurry on my knees to the far edge of the mattress.
Get naked,
Connor orders. I certainly will not.
Listen, Taylor, we're going to settle this and then there'll be no more arguments.
Settle what exactly?
I'm going to fuck your brains out and prove my dick is totally into you.
Excuse me? Even as I gape at him, my gaze unwittingly drops to his crotch. I can't tell if the bulge beneath that stretchy black fabric is a hard-on or just his normal old package. Either way, Connor's declaration is so preposterous, it summons a loud, hysterical bark of laughter from deep in my gut. Then another, and another. Soon, I can't breathe, doubled over in a painful fit. It just won't stop. Every time I look at his face, a new wave of laughter overtakes me and tears spill down my cheeks. He's too fucking much.
Taylor.
Connor rakes both hands through his hair.
Taylor, stop laughing at me.
I can't!
You're doing irreparable harm to my ego here.
Gasping, I take deep breaths. Eventually, the laughter subsides to giggles. Thank you, I manage to croak out. I needed that.
You know what?
He growls, a cranky scowl on his face.
I take it all back. You're dick kryptonite.
Aw, come here. I climb back on the bed and pet the spot beside me. Instead of being a normal person, he takes it upon himself to lie down and drop his head and shoulders across my lap. It doesn't escape me that I now have a sexy man in his boxers draped over me. And it's difficult to focus with him looking so, well, like that. This isn't the first time I've seen Connor half naked, and yet the effect is no less impressive. He's what guys picture in the mirror when they're lifting weights and mugging for gym selfies. Every douchebag in a tank top thinks he's Connor fucking Edwards.
I can't believe you didn't get naked,
he grumbles in accusation. I'm sorry. That was a very sweet invitation, but I respectfully decline.
Well, that makes you my first.
Connor stares up at me with those gorgeous gray eyes, and for one fleeting moment, an image flashes through my mind. Me leaning down, him cupping the side of my face, our lips meeting in the space between us. Do not kiss him, Taylor! My inner alarm system kicks in, causing my silly schoolgirl kissing fantasy to dissolve just as quickly as it appeared. I'm your first what? I ask, trying to remember what we're talking about. Connor Edwards is in my lap, and it's really quite distracting.
First girl to ever reject my cock.
Not for the first time either, I remind him.
Yes, thank you, Taylor. You find me unfuckable. I get it.
Connor flicks up an eyebrow.
It'd be a shame, though.
His hair begs for fingers, to drag them through the soft strands, to touch. My hand itches with the urge to fulfill that wish. What's a shame?
Don't stop.
It isn't until he speaks that I realize my fingers have run off on their own accord.
That feels good.
So I continue, combing my fingers through his hair, softly pulling my nails across his scalp. What's a shame?
Well, we've laid such great groundwork already. Spent a night of mind-blowing sex together. Everyone thinks you've got me pussy-tranced into falling in love with you. Seems unfortunate to let that all go to waste.
I eye him suspiciously. What do you propose?
Let's write it out.
Write it out. I play with the idea in my head, turning it over. It is, of course, a terribly dishonest and immature suggestion, so naturally I'm intrigued. To what end?
Marriage, death, or graduation,
he says.
Whichever comes first.
Okay, but why? What's in it for you?
A cure for my boredom.
He grins up at me.
I like games, T. This feels like it'll be a fun one.
Uh-huh. But what if my perfect man comes along to sweep me off my feet, but he gets scared away by Connor fucking Edwards sniffing around my petticoats?
First, yes, keep calling me that. Second, if he can't take a little healthy competition, he isn't your perfect man. Trust me on that, babe.
Every time he calls me babe, a stab of electricity shoots through my chest. I wonder if he feels my pulse spike. Or maybe he knows all too well he has that effect on every girl, and I am but a toy doll off the assembly line. Lot 251 per 1 billion. Wind me up and watch me go. Fine. What about your admirers? I counter. What if Natalie from Tridelt wants another go and suddenly you have a fake girlfriend? He shrugs.
I'm not interested in another go with her.
Bull. Have you seen her hair? It's so shiny. That earns me a snicker.
Shiny hair aside, I'm being serious. She posted a pic of me naked in her bed when I was asleep. That ain't cool with me. Consent, you know?
Bull, I say again. Look at you. With both hands, I gesture toward his half-naked playgirl physique. You probably love flaunting it for the camera.
Not without my consent,
he repeats, and the hard look on his face tells me he really wasn't fond of Natalie's actions. I suppose I can't blame him. I still have nightmares about Kappa Pledge Week and all the embarrassing shit the seniors filmed us doing.
Anyway,
he goes on,
maybe I need a break from the sex circuit. Take some time to regroup.
I punch him in the shoulder. Sex circuit? Oh my God, must you be so gross? He offers that cocky grin again.
You don't think I'm gross. Otherwise, you wouldn't be letting me snuggle up in your lap.
I swallow through my suddenly dry throat. This is not considered snuggling, I say sternly.
Sure it is, T.
It sure isn't, C, I mock. And what, you're saying you're going to abstain from sex for the foreseeable future? Because I don't buy that. Connor looks aghast.
Abstain? Hell no. I'm going to try to seduce you at every turn.
A laugh flies out of my mouth. You're incorrigible.
Why'd you stop playing with my hair? Felt nice.
His tongue darts out to moisten his bottom lip, an adorable action that quickens my pulse.
So what do you say? We keep pretending for a while longer?
The fact that I'm entertaining this idea says I had too much to drink today, I respond.
That was hours ago. You're not drunk. Besides, tell me the look on Abigail's face every time she's seen us together hasn't gone straight to your tingly place.
First, don't ever call it that again. Second, I want to tell him he's wrong, that I'm above such petty amusements. However, he's not entirely wrong about the tingle. Maybe I enjoyed it a little, I confess.
Ha! I knew it! You enjoy the game as much as I do.
Just a little, I stress.
Liar.
When he sits abruptly, I experience a sense of loss I'm not allowed to feel, but I feel it all the same, missing the heaviness of his warm body on me and the softness of his blonde hair between my fingers. What are you doing? I demand as he hops off the bed and grabs his discarded pants. He returns with his phone, plopping down beside me. His thumb slides over the screen as he, well, I'm not sure what he's doing. Because I'm nosy, I lean closer to peek and discover that he's pulled up MyBriar, our school's social media app. My eyes widen as I watch him change his status to in a relationship. Hey, I chide. I didn't say yes.
You basically said yes.
I was at 70% at best.
Welp. Might as well prance that last 30 because we're blowing up, babe.
Oh, my effing God. The little bubble above the notification icon starts blinking. 10, 20, 40.
Come on,
he coaxes.
I'm bored. This'll be good for a laugh, at least. Best case scenario, you cave to my smoldering good looks and fall into bed with me.
You wish.
I really do. But fine. Second best case scenario, it might get Abigail to lay off you for a while. That's worth something, right?
That would be nice, especially since there's a Kappa chapter meeting tomorrow and I just know Abigail will be all over me with her passive-aggressive jabs.
You know you want to.
He wiggles his phone in the air enticingly. My gaze is drawn to the thick silver band around his middle finger. Nice ring. Where'd you get it?
L.A., and you're deflecting.
He holds the phone out to me.
I dare you.
You're incredibly persistent.
Some would consider it one of my better qualities.
Also, completely obnoxious. Connor flashes his self-assured grin that says obnoxious is just girl code for charming when she's about to break.
Taylor Marsh, will you do me the incredible honor of updating your relationship status and becoming my fake girlfriend?
And break she does. As if possessed by some supernatural being, my hand takes the phone from him. My finger logs out of his MyBri and then logs into mine. And as I change my status to match his, I'm vaguely aware of two things. One, I could have just used my own phone, but it would have ruined the moment. And two, whatever this is, it's bound to get messy. 8. Taylor. Less than 24 hours after Connor and I make it official, the entire Kappa membership gathers at the house while our chapter president leads the meeting. First on the agenda is the upcoming spring election for next year's president and vice president. Naturally, since Charlotte is a senior, Abigail, as her VP, is the heir apparent. Gag me with a dish rag. To ensure no undue influence on the part of myself or the vice president, Charlotte is saying, Fiona will lead the election commission with Willow and Madison. They will host the platform dinner and coordinate the ballot committee. Anyone interested in helping out should talk with them after the meeting. Truth is, the election is all but a formality. Every year, the outgoing senior names a junior as her VP, and she is elected the following year. All pretenses that we aren't living under a dynastic system are insulting. Danny, who's running against Abigail as the lone voice of resistance, doesn't stand a chance. But she's got my vote. Fee, Charlotte prompts. The tall redhead stands up. Yes. Okay. So both Abigail and Danny will give their final campaign speeches at the platform dinner. The format will be... My phone vibrates against my thigh, drawing focus away from Fiona. I peer down and hide a smile when I read Connor's text. Him.
How's my sexy babe doing this afternoon?
I covertly type back a response, although I feel Sasha's knowing gaze on me. She's in the chair next to mine, no doubt trying to read what I'm writing. Me. In the middle of a chapter meeting. Kill me now. Him.
Kill you? But then how will we ever fuck?
I fight a laugh and reply with an eye roll emoji. He ups the ante by sending a picture of his abs, and I try not to drool all over the dining room table. Are you going to share with the rest of the class, Tay-Tay? Comes Abigail's snippy voice. My head jerks up. Sorry, I blurt, setting my phone on the tabletop. I give Fiona and then Charlotte apologetic looks. Someone texted, and I was just texting back to say I'm in the middle of a meeting.
Someone? Sasha cracks, laughing. And does that someone's name start with a C and end with an honor?
I turn to glare at her, but the remark has already snagged the interest of our president. Connor? She echoes. As in Connor Edwards? I manage a weak nod.
My girl Taylor's landed herself a hockey god.
My best friend brags on my behalf, and I'm torn between smacking her for making me the center of attention and thanking her for hyping me up. Sasha Lennox is the best hype woman there is. She's also well aware that the whole MyBri relationship status stuff was baloney. So now I'm praying she doesn't slip up and somehow reveal the truth. No shit, Charlotte says, looking impressed. Good going, Marsh. They fucked in my room, Rachel boasts, as if that means she's one step away from being Connor Edwards' girlfriend herself. Oh, big fucking deal. Abigail speaks up, her pale green eyes cool as ice. Who hasn't fucked that guy? I mean, seriously, show of hands, who here has slept with Connor Edwards? After several seconds of hesitation, three hands are raised, a sheepish Willow and Taryn on the other side of the table, and a blushing Laura who's standing against the wall. Well, dude gets around. I swallow the tiny lump of jealousy that rises in my throat and remind myself that I already knew he was a player. Besides, He's a grown-ass man. He's allowed to sleep with whomever he wants, my sorority sisters included. Sensing my discomfort, Sasha turns toward Abigail, pinning the platinum blonde with an equally icy stare.
What are you saying, Abs? You implying that Taylor is, what, of lesser value because her man has a past? Like, that means anything.
In fact, show of hands, Sasha mimics. Who here has slept with one of Abigail's douchey ex-boyfriends? To my great amusement, twice the amount of hands shoot up. That's right, 6 kappas, and none of them look the slightest bit sheepish this time around. I suspect they're receiving some sort of perverse pleasure in admitting it because Abigail is such a bitch. Abigail's trusted lackey Jules sports a deep scowl. Anyone here ever heard of the girl code? Sasha snickers.
You tell me, Julianne. Weren't you the one who just stole Duke Jarrett away from some Theta Beta new chick?
That shuts up Jules. Charlotte clears her throat. All right, we've strayed off topic. Fiona, you were telling us about the candidate speeches? Just as Fiona opens her mouth to answer, my phone buzzes again, eliciting an excited shriek from Rachel, who's draping practically her entire body across the dining table to see the screen.
He's FaceTiming you!
My heart does a nervous flip. I'm so sorry, I tell Charlotte. Let me just ignore the...
Ignore?
Charlotte echoes in disbelief. For fuck's sake, Marsh, answer it! Oh my God. This is my worst nightmare. What on earth compelled my stupid fake boyfriend to FaceTime me when I just told him I was in a chapter meeting? Why would he do this to...
Answer it!
Lisa Donaldson shrieks. I'm pretty sure this is the only time Lisa Donaldson has ever even spoken to me. Heart racing, I tap the accept button. A second later, the call connects and Connor's gorgeous face fills the screen.
Babe. Hey.
His deep voice fills the Kappa Chi dining room, and I notice several of my sisters, honest to God, shiver.
Sorry, I know you said you were in a meeting, but I just wanted to tell you.
He stops mid-sentence, his gray eyes narrowing with appreciation.
Damn, T. You look good enough to eat.
I'm not sure it's humanly possible to blush harder than I currently am. I shove a hunk of hair behind my ear and grumble at the screen. Seriously? That's what you interrupted my meeting to say?
Nah, that wasn't it.
He offers a little boy grin, and anyone with a clear view of my phone sighs and swoons like Victorian maidens. Then what was it? Connor winks.
Just wanted to tell you I miss you.
Oh my God, breathes Rachel.
Damn,
someone's laying it on thick. Before I can answer him, the phone is grabbed from his hand and a new face greets me.
Taylor!
Matt Anderson exclaims happily.
Yo, when you coming over next? Foster found us a new movie to watch. It's got black holes and giant squids!
Comes Foster's faint shout. Soon, Maddie, I promise. Then pray he doesn't call me out for referring to him as Maddie. But hell, if Connor's allowed to lay it on thick, then so am I. Anyway, I'm hanging up now. I'm busy. I disconnect the call, set down the phone, and find an entire room of wide-eyed girls staring at me with naked envy. Even Sasha seems impressed, and she's in on the charade. I am so sorry, I say awkwardly. I'll make sure he never interrupts during a meeting again. All good, Charlotte assures me. We all know those hockey players are hard to say no.